Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Hello and welcome to the Survival Post, where we blend bushcrafting, prepping, and survival together in one location. So please join us as we learn together here at the Survival Post.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Survival Post. As always, I'm Casey.
I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Marshall.
And we are the Survival Post. Right off the bat, guys, let's just, you know, it's been a week now, and I'm still super stoked to have Marshall on as a new member of the Survival Post. Brother, welcome back.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be a part of the team.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't think the listeners have truly grasped just yet what you're going to be bringing to the table. You know, that's why I'm truly looking forward to future episodes and things that we're going to be doing with you. I know the last episode, JP, was pretty taken back by some of the things you were talking about, man.
Yeah, I mean, he stole the show. I had topics picked out, and he just took it.
Oh, I didn't mean to do that, man, but I'm glad have something to be part of.
Yes, you did. You can go ahead and admit it. You meant to do that.
Yeah, I admit it. It was fun. I ain't gonna lie.
What's your take on everything so far, being a part of it? So
I think it's great. I think it's good. I mean, we've got a piece of everything people could be looking for. It's one of those, we're coming to one-stop shop. Any questions they've got, urban, woodland, it's all right here.
Right. So anyways, well, Casey, you mentioned you kind of had something picked out. So
yeah, kind of tonight, I want to continue on. I want to take what we were talking about last episode, and I kind of want to continue on with it with prioritizing, because now, you know, we have the wooded aspect of it and we have the urban aspect of it. You know, do these things coexist? Is there a way to prioritize needs in what we're doing and how we go about short-term, long-term survival? You know, going back to a couple episodes ago, should I stay, should I go? And basically it all comes down to prioritizing what you have in your inventory. You know, and the same can be said on the urban side as well, about what you have in what order you use that in. And I know you and I have talked in the past, JP, about the sacred order and, right, you know, basically the way things should be done, you know, fire, water, shelter, food. Which one comes first? And I know we've had, you and I have had discussions about what we think is the top. And I know you and I have differed on several occasions regarding this, but I think we're finally coming to a head on, you know, what order we think this stuff should go in, you know. And if you would, just go ahead and talk about that for a minute and let the audience know.
Well, yeah, you know, in the past, you and I have kind of bounced back and forth between the sacred order, which was shelter, water, fire, and food. And then you liked using the five C's, which I can't remember what those are. You know, you picked up the five C's, I think, from Dave,
right,
if I'm not mistaken. You know, so that's where that was what you always preferred to teach. But they both involve the same thing. It's just I always said you need to have them in order. Well, you know, as I said a minute ago, we went shelter, water, fire, and food. Well, myself here lately, I've mentioned it to you that I'm thinking about changing that in what we teach.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because we use fire so much, and especially in Louisiana, it seems like every time you and I go on a trip together or we've done anything, that fire takes a priority over everything. It just seems like when we put it second or after anything else, it just seems like we suffer a little more.
Or we just wind up putting it first, not realizing it.
Right. You know, and I don't know if that's because we're a little bit more skilled with it or what, but either way, and the reason I'm really moving it up above water in the sacred order is all the water we have anymore on the earth is polluted. So if you're mm-hmm. out there and you're having to survive or you're living primitively or, you know, even in an urban environment, you know, if you're catching rainwater, you still want to boil that water. So I'm really moving fire up on my list because any water that you find, you've got to purify it now. In Louisiana, you've got to have that fire to make most of the tools that you're going to get primitively because, you know, you can't find stone. There's not a lot of trees to make that you can peel the bark off to make a quick container. So, you know, you've got to use fire to make that bowl. You've got to use fire to make those tools to do any hunting or anything. So,
you also need the fire to keep the boogeyman away at night because I know you, JP, get a little scared sometimes. So,
We've got the boogeyman with us now, so you and I've got nothing to be worried with.
Well, yes. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Welcome to new guy.
What about you, Marshall, as far as prioritizing in an urban environment? Because you had mentioned at one point, you know, shelter really ain't an issue, and I'd never thought about that, you know.
Right, and it's great listening to you talk because catching it from a woods aspect, when you're in an urban environment, you're right. You've already got shelter. You've got all these houses around. Even if there's something wrong with the houses, you've got sheds mostly in the backyard. And then as far as water is concerned, most of the houses have gutters on them. So most of your collection's done. You just need a container to catch it in. But where I really agree is when you look at the prioritizing, fire does have to go at the top of the list because of the fact that you need to boil the water. You need to cook your food. You need to create heat. And at times, yes, you need that fire as light just to read or as simple as instead of using another match to light a candle, you can go outside and light it in your fire. So I agree with you. It's definitely at the top of the list.
Right. Well, and it just, it's disheartening to me that all the water is that polluted, but that's just, it's a reality we face now.
Well, mostly, and you're right too, especially using your house to collect water. And I believe if I'm right, it's on 1,500 square foot roof and 1 inch in height, you can collect it's thousands of gallons of water in a short amount of time. A friend of mine was just talking to me about that. I looked at it in relation to my house. And the containers that I have to collect the water, and I'm like, okay, I can catch that water relatively quickly. It's already done. But then looking at it, I got to clean that water. It's also it's coming off the shingles of my roof. I got birds flying around on feces on my roof.
Exactly. I was about to say the same thing, man.
Well, I was thinking of that same thing, even in the primitive aspect. You know, when any animal that walks into the water, they're going to do their business in the water, you know.
Even if they don't do their business, they've walked through somebody else's business.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, but so you know what? It's coming in that water.
I really want to ask JP something because it's a great topic tonight because I was coming down one of the highways when I made the turns under the bridge. There's a ditch, and I saw a large amount of cattails growing mm-hmm. underneath it. And I just so happened a friend of mine was talking to me about using when you break them apart, you can use the fibers, stick them in a tube, and use that to filter water. And immediately in my head was urban and the woods aspect of it coming together, and you know it's two similarities right there.
Right. Well, yeah, you know that's a good point. And you brought up something else just then that I always try to emphasize when it comes to eating edible plants, drinking water, or animals that really ain't that big of a deal. But any edible plants, any water that you find right along the edge of a road, leave that alone.
I agree.
And the reason why, especially if it's a heavily use roads such as a main highway or even just some of these back roads that have quite a few houses. The exhaust from your cars, that's where it settles. And you've got a lot of, I can't even think of all the metals that's there, but you get lead, magnesium, manganese, and iron. It all settles right there, and especially plants like wild onions. I'm not so sure about cattails, but a lot of the plants where it's the root that you're going to eat that they've absorbed those metals. And a lot of states are now planting specific plants along the side to absorb those metals.
Wow.
So that's great. I just thought I'd mention that. When you said that, it just kind of brought that up.
Yeah, I know. Bring to mind of water. Go ahead, Casey.
I know down here, the dandelions, you know, you start going after dandelion roots and things of that nature. I mean, they're everywhere on side of the road, as well as goldenrod this time of year. And goldenrod's a huge medicinal plant. You know, I would rather pass up the goldenrod sitting on side of the road that, you know, it's probably 100 plants within 10 feet but would rather go look for it in the woods.
Yeah. I'd say you get 100 yards off of the main path. You're probably good.
Yeah.
You know, if it's along beside your driveway that you might drive down once or twice a day, probably not as far, maybe 10, 15 feet and you're good. But it's just something to be cautious of.
Right. And what is the milk thistleweed grows all along the side of the road. It's a great plant. I mean, it's huge medicinal resources. Again, stay away from the side of the road. I mean, it's like you standing on side of the road. Just, you might as well sit there and just breathe in all that stuff, because whether you breathe it in or take it in on an edible plant, it's still getting in your system.
And you're bringing up a great point, too, and this is something new to me, because now in my head I'm thinking as far as the rainwater collection off the roof. So many cars pass up and down my street, the exhaust not only just going on the plants, but what also could be settling on my roof that's washing down into the gutter, that's washing down into my rain barrels. So I'm using that to water my plants.
So what you should do is build a dome over your house and everything you've got, this huge dome.
I've got the PVC and I've got the Bisqueen. As soon as Casey and you get over here and help me, let's do it.
Could you imagine trying to build a dome over your house or your community? I think they have a TV show about that.
In the front yard?
think they made a movie about that with Pauly Shore, Biodome or something.
Yeah, Biodome.
Like that.
Yeah, that was one of his first movies.
I would be the bubble boy in the Biodome.
Oh, my goodness. You know, but you do bring up a great point about that, Marshall, with the collection of rainwater and everything. I don't think it would be as prevalent on there, you know, just because it's a continuous washout from the roof. Do I think some would be there? Yeah, I think some would be there, but not near the amounts of toxicity there would be along the side of the road.
But it's still something very to keep concerned about. I think especially people along interstate routes and highways with those large tractor trailers, if you've ever been on one of them.
Well, I think it would be a huge issue if the houses were below a high rise, below a bridge, below an on-ramp or something like that. Yeah, then I can see, you know, the parts per million just be astronomical. But, you know, if you're just on a regular residential highway, I think all to say that it'd be relatively safe. I think anyone who is doing that should definitely research that within their community and where their house is located, as far as high rises and interstate crossovers or bridges.
Yeah, that's a good point.
With the priority, you know, basic question, you're in your urban environment, what do you feel would be the most important aspect, you know, fire, water, shelter? Well, shelter's kind of out of the question just due to the fact that, you know, shelter is always there pretty much. You know, you brought that up. But what do you feel is the number one need for an urban environment?
Definitely fire, without a doubt, fire. Because, like I said, you've got shelters all around you. You've got multiple rainwater collections, so you've got water. Also, in residential areas, a lot of pools. I've got two neighbors right next to me. Both of them have pools, so shelter and water are still factors, but they're not as high on the list as I'd say fire is, because you have to boil the water. You need it for heat. You need to cook food. You need it for light. But then I'd have to say right underneath it would be food, because of the fact that once the grocery store is closed, once the discount store is closed, if you don't have a garden in your backyard, if you don't have any type of livestock, the food that you have on hand will eventually run out. So if you're looking at any scenarios, people that don't have gardens, people that don't have chickens, quails, rabbits, should really start to research this. And also what it brings to mind is if it's growing, you don't have to refrigerated, and that's less electricity yeah. that you'll be pulling off your solar panels, wind turbines, and so forth.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. That something that Tom Brown, I'm a Tom Brown fan, something he's always mentioned in all of it, in several of his books, I ain't going to say all of them, is the best refrigerator is on four legs.
Yeah, and I know I say something similar to that when I do that hunting course is, you know, live food doesn't spoil.
Right.
You know, it's as simple as growing, that.
Yeah, if it's growing or if it's walking around, you're not, it's using its own electricity and it's staying fresh. So
I will have to say this. Now that, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you, Marshall, and you and I, JP, kind of have that same philosophy, you know, just this best refrigerator, live food doesn't spoil. But if you were in a survival situation or an urban situation and you have a live food, you have canned food or freeze-dried food, not only are you trying to fend for yourself and feed yourself, if it's only you, you also have to feed that animal. So do you use your canned food or your reconstitute freeze-dried food to do that, to hopefully you can get a meal, a substantial meal by fattening him up? But when you, after you harvest that animal, how would you refrigerate it? Or do you, you know, you see what I'm getting at here? It's, if you're waiting to use that animal for a special period, you're feeding him your food that you have saved for yourself. So,
well, no, what you could do, what you do is a lot of my neighbors laugh when I cut my grass. I'll ask them, hey, do you mind if I cut your grass? And the first thing they think of is, well, do I have to pay you? And I say, no, let me cut your grass because I'll use those grass clippings to feed my chickens. When I grow my garden, when I'm planting it, whether it's fall or the spring, a percentage of it is grown specifically to feed animals. My quail, when I grow carrots for the rabbits, I can grow lettuces, onions, and so forth to feed the quail and feed the chickens. But then when you go to harvest this to eat it, it'll stay good once you harvest that. You use part of, like, when, I'll say a chicken. I can get four meals to feed two people out of one chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to eat it all at one time. But there are different ways that you can store. A great one I saw, I'm learning more about, is using wet sand between clay pots with a lid on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it condensates and it cools on the inside. They talk about cooling soft drinks in it, lowering the temperature, and you get a nice cold soft drink. I'm looking at it as when I harvest some of my meat, when I harvest some of my, even some of my vegetables, well, I can put in something like that.
We actually use that. Sorry. I was trying to cough a minute ago. We actually use that same method to keep our tomatoes and cucumbers fresh growing up.
It's similar to a food cellar. It's what you're essentially recreating when you do the with the terracotta pots and everything, right?
It's exactly, that's it. It's an above ground cellar, a food cellar. It's definitely, it's the same thing as if it would be in the ground, except it's above ground. And for potatoes, I can speak, it works wonderful.
Something we're talking about prioritizing. We're talking about gardens and keeping it fresh. There's a side of it that I've been curious about that I want to ask. And I think you and I had talked once about secret gardens. Maybe that was what you called it. Can you elaborate and maybe give a couple of tips on that?
Sure. It's gardens that when you're out in the woods and you're not having gardens right where you're sleeping or right where your camp's at. It's basically a simple scenario. You can have green onions. You can have carrots growing, and you put logs around it to square it off to almost make like a raised garden, but it's flush with the ground. But you can take leaves as your mulch to kind of hide them and take other branches to cover them with, to where sunlight's still getting to it, but anybody just walking by may not notice the greens above ground. It's camouflaging itself. So you can have gardens away from your campsite to give you more room to grow, but less likely for people to come and take it from you.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead, Casey.
Now, when you do that, I mean, we're throwing basic rules of rotation and what goes good with this plant, what doesn't go good with this plant when you do this, you know, secret or guerrilla gardening in the woods. Because like if you plant some green onions there, they're just going to stay, right? And same with carrots or onions, because after you harvest those, you're not going to, you know, oh, what month is it? Let me put in what's going to put the nutrition back in the ground. You're going to go immediately back in with some green onions or something. Am I right?
Well, a lot of times you can, but it just depends upon the variety you're going to grow. You have that plot already done. What I love talking is when a lot of people grow corn, or they try and grow corn. Corn will take every last bit of nutrients in that soil out, and then you have to follow behind it, which a lot of farmers do, with a bean of some sort or a grain to replenish that soil. What I learned just a couple of years ago and through a friend of mine that does farm this way, when he grows his corn, he grows his beans with it. And the corn acts as a trellis for the beans, and the beans actually put back into the soil the nutrients that the corn's taken out. So you can actually, if you got a heavily timbered area that you can grow your corn stalks and your beans, people that pass them by are just going to think it's high weeds. It's these high stocks.
Right. That's kind of the act I've always took on the secret gardening. Rather than just plant a patch, I might plant just a few in one spot, you know, no more than two or three stalks, and then move completely away from that 10, 15 foot, do something else, and maybe even go farther. And I do a rotation, kind of like what Casey was mentioning. I've got a circle that I would follow when I was living primitively. I did it about three or four times. And that was my way of doing a secret garden. And it was more of just a rotation to check my traps and a few things of that sort. And I just kind of made a pass all at the same time.
Right. A lot of these gardens aren't any bigger than 8x6. You want them not small enough to where it's going to be more of your energy to follow around and try and take care of all these little gardens, but you don't want them so big that they're going to stand out, that they're going to look different from their environment. So you're relatively about 8x6. I'd say never go any larger than 10x10, definitely, but that would depend upon what environment you're in.
Right. That's huge in a, you know, for a gorilla or secret garden out in the woods. See, I was always like, If I see something, a wild edible growing in a certain area, I'd go and put in some green onions over here. And then I'd see some more wild edibles growing over here, and I'd plant something over there. So they were scattered, you know, it wasn't grouped up, to where it says, oh, hey, something's here. They were just wild out there. So they would always be there. Heck, they're probably still growing in my old house. I have no clue. But let's kind of shift gears for a second. So, because we've talked about prioritizing, we've talked about gardening, we've talked about the livestock, raising of chickens and quails and rabbits, etc. At what point, okay, is enough enough? At what point do we say, or does, you know, the listener say, okay, at what point do I start wasting this stuff? You know, when is it a... when is it not survival anymore and it's hoarding?
The way you made that come across was like, when I can start wasting some.
So, right.
What you're getting at though is, when have you accumulated enough that's your amount that you need of that?
In other words,
And it's funny. That's a great point you bring up, because of the fact I honestly just went through where with the chickens, I was going on Craigslist, and every time I saw free chickens, I was calling the people up right away. At one time in my backyard, I had 53 chickens, and it took up a decent size. And that's when I had to step back and say, wait a minute, am I getting this just because I want it? The need factor kind of outweighed or leads into the want factor, which really can get out of hand real quick. So,
yeah, because when it gets to that point, do you manage them, or are they managing you, you know, at that point?
It's feed-wise, room-wise, space-wise, they really start to manage you. And that's when you got to sit back and you got to look at, normally, what do you and your family consume? When you would normally go to the grocery store and you'd buy the chickens or the hamburgers or what have you, what would you have in your freezer? And that's when I started sitting down, and I'd make weekly meals, a list. and I planned my meals, and I got it from a coworker. That's how she basically shops. She would make her meal list out and then go shop off of that list. So her pantry was never completely full, but she never wasted anything either. And that's when I...
All right, see, and that's what we do. We do something similar to that.
Yeah, and when you're growing your stuff, especially you look at your meals and you list out what you use, and that's what you grow. Then you use the quantities, and then the same thing with your chickens and your rabbits. One thing I'll do is, and definitely do not do it monthly. You go weekly. Let your weeks turn into your months as far as your lists are concerned. Because with my rabbits, I'll plan, okay, I'll eat fish so many meals. I'll eat rabbits so many meals. I may eat a salad as a meal. So I know just about how much I need and how much I have to grow, and I won't lose space, and I won't lose food, and I won't take up space in the freezer.
Well, you know, looking at this from the woodsy aspect, I like how you call it woodsy. you know, survival is all about the economics of your energy. How much energy are you having to put into what you're getting back? And you start with a fire. It just consumes so much energy. That's why you really need to practice and get it done quick. And I'm using that just as a quick example. But, you know, if you're having to put more into it than you're getting back, such as what he was saying, man, they're managing you. That's beyond your cutoff point. Right. Now, sure, you can eat those chickens, but and there's an abundance, you're going to and maybe get fat for just a little while. But if you're putting more into that than what you're going to get back, that's what you need to look at.
Right. And what a lot of people ask me about it is the time-wise. I mean, urban. Right now, luckily, nothing's happening, but I have to go to work in the morning. I come home. I have kids. I have to take care of them in the evening. And a lot of people ask me, just how much time does it take you? The first thing I tell them is, everybody's different. It depends on what you have and how much you have. I really try and keep it down to what I have to do feed-wise, watering-wise, cleaning-wise, to a half an hour in the morning and a half an hour in the evening. If I really have to go past that, I'm doing too much.
Now, you know, I don't mean to cut you off there, but we have our listeners, and we're going to have people who say, well, you know, it's easier, or it's – for me, it's just, you know – more feasible to go out and I'll spend $20 and I'll go to the local grocery store and I'll buy 20 things to put back. Okay. It's not costing me any more money beyond that of just purchasing the item. Okay. You see what I mean? I don't have to buy food for that item. I don't have to clean that item. I don't have to maintain that item's home. It's there in a can, or it's freeze dried in a pouch or MRE or whatever. And I can store it in my pantry or in my storage area, set it and forget it, more or less. Okay. And once I spend that 20, I'm spending no more than $20 on those particular items. Whereas for livestock or raising an animal, let's say I purchase it for 20. Now I'm spending more money for, let's say, food or feed, a particular type of food or feed. Now I'm spending money to maintain. That's if, okay, I'm just using a regular, everyday, common person. I'm not talking about your situation you have going on where you, it's, where I can get stuff. And to me, that's the best way to be. You see it? Oh, somebody's throwing it out. One man's junk is another man's treasure. Okay. Most people aren't like that. You know, you have the individuals that just say, I'd rather put money toward it and just have it then, instead of doing right. that wait and build it and take the satisfaction of doing it by hand. So that's the point I'm trying to get at. That individual is going to say, $20, set it and forget it. It'll be there when I need it. I'm not going to do that. I mean, what do you have to say to that individual who has that type of mindset?
If I'm hearing you correctly, I think I might have mistaken it. There are people that come to me and tell me, instead of me having this in my backyard, I can have a nice clean backyard. Instead of me having to grow my plants or grow my food, I'm just going to go to the store. I'm going to spend the $20. I can put my cans away. I can get freeze-dried foods, the MREs, and put it up. Which brings up a great point in another part of my prioritization is grouping. And what I mean by grouping is you're going to the store and you're buying these cans and you're buying these MREs or you're buying you this free dried food for you and, say, the four other members of your family. But when something happens, as I learned in Katrina, all of a sudden, all your neighbors at one point or another, they start running out. And they know you have, so they're coming to you. So now the stock that you had for four or five people just went to 10 people, just went to 15 people. So you definitely have to look at that aspect of it also.
I got a couple things to add to that, I think. Yeah, but, you know, as far as live food versus something canned that you could get from the grocery store, to me, if you got chickens in your yard, they're reproducing by way of eggs, by recreating chickens. So in a primitive or even an urban situation such as what Marshall's in, it's constantly reproducing for you. If you're not sitting there cooking them every day, you're getting the eggs out of it, and you're getting things that you need.
I would have to agree with you. But you know me, I've got to play the devil's advocate on this, okay? Let's say I'm that guy who doesn't want to maintain these chickens, who does not want to maintain that garden. I have money. I just want to buy it, okay? Now, that's one guy. The second guy is, Marshall, you brought up a good point with Katrina, and JP and I has talked about, you know, the aftermath and what it's like down here for Katrina, but that's another podcast. But livestock, is your livestock going to make it through another Katrina, a hurricane, a blizzard, an earthquake, a tidal wave, you know, a monsoon? Is that livestock going to make it, or is that just kind of the chance you take?
That's all stuff you got to look at, but there's all preparations for it. Even if you take two chickens with you, you're still going to have eggs.
Right? See, that's my argument. You know, you take a guy like Marshall that has learned what to do, and you give him two chickens, within a week, he's good again.
Right. Yep. But I mean, there's you bring up a good point, but the most, I guess you want to say, if you really want to, the validity of it, I know what's going into my food that I'm going to consume.
And I've got another argument, and this is what
folks, in case you're just joining us, you know, the Survival Post, again, I'm Casey, you got Jonathan, you got Marshall. This is what this show's about. We got three different opinions going on here, and they're all valid topics. So go ahead, Jonathan.
In that situation, his neighbor started running out of food. Marshall had the food. Who do you think's in control and has the power at that moment?
Right.
No cliche here, but more power to Marshall for being that guy. But I don't want to be that person that has to go beg from him, because at that point, I've got to start giving up what I do have.
Exactly.
To Marshall. So if he wants bullets and I happen to have the bullets, guess what? He's going to want to trade.
Which brings up another podcast we can do on bartering. You can trade, barter. If I've got something that you don't, you have something I don't, you make the trade.
Right, and then back to the canned food versus fresh food. One thing that I learned when I was living primitively, and I still try to even incorporate it into our everyday lives, living in an urban environment, is fresh food. Not fresh food. I was thinking seasonal. The wintertime is your time for your foods that you have processed or preserved, you know, your anything like jerkies and canned foods or canning. That's when you want to eat that. Eat your fresh foods during your summer. And that's to me, that's probably just a bigger health issue, you know, as far as just the cycle of the year compared to the cycle of the body. And you know, you can argue that easily. Anybody could argue that. Y'all might even want to argue that with me right here. But that's just something, you know, health wise that I think about. But that was the first thing that actually came to my mind when you brought it up, Casey.
Yeah, you know, it comes up with a good point. You know, because let's face it, during the summer times down here, we're fishing. You know, we're fishing. We're growing. We're doing all that. Now we're rolling into, you know, deer season and squirrel season and everything. We're going to be putting back, you know, I know every every place has their seasonal dishes. I know in my town, in my home, as soon as the first cold snap hits, it's time for some gumbo, you know? So I've got chicken stock put back and fresh farm chickens put back. And
right. In February, crawfish, that's the season. And that's what I'm talking about. Eating seasonal just seems to be a healthier lifestyle. And that's why your winter, you prepare for winter and everything's preserved for the winter.
And most part, as far as I'm concerned, I don't mind going out during the summer, but the less I got to go out in the winter, the better.
See, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. But to follow up on your point, Jonathan, with canned foods and everything and fresh food, your best nutrients are going to come from those fresh foods. You know, those canned foods are just not going to have a quarter of the nutrients fresh food is going to have. Fresh lettuce, fresh tomatoes, fresh eggplant, cucumbers, etc. You know, it's a completely different taste, completely different texture. And folks, if you haven't done it, go to your local farmer's market if you don't garden.
Yeah, if you've never had fresh food, fresh produce from a garden, there's nothing like it. And that was my next point I was going to bring up was that you're going to get tired of that canned food.
Mm-hmm.
So I do. You know, if I go and I eat out at restaurants several nights in a row, I get to that point, I've got to have a home-cooked meal. It's one of those routine kind of things, I guess.
Right. And, Casey, to get back to the person with the I got the $20, I'll just do that. That's fine. And I have no problem with people like that. I still go to the grocery store. But as long as they have it in the back of that mind that one day there may come a time that – there may not be that grocery store. There may not be that Quick Mart. There may come a time that currency may not be any good. I've got a lot of friends that don't keep cash on them. They only have checks and credit cards. It may come to the time to where the stores aren't going to accept that. They're not going to take those checks. They're not going to take that credit card. What do you eat then? So,
well, it's not just that. How much of that can you take with you if you've got to get on the move?
Great point, the weight.
Yeah, you know, if you've got to move with animals, at least you could throw a bunch of canned food into your car. Is that feasible? You could throw your chickens into the back of your car. I guess that's half a dozen one way and six another, but I still would just argue that animals that reproduce is a much better choice than and there's nothing wrong with it. All three of us sitting here talking, we probably got a week's worth of canned food at least.
Definitely.
We've got it. But so it's got its place. But on the same hand, kudos to Marshall. You know, he'll live a little bit longer than I will because with me renting, I'm not able to grow anything in my backyard. So I would be one of those right now.
And that's a great point, I'd love to do another podcast on that too, just like you say, because a lot of people think like that. Oh, I live in an apartment,
right? And that's my our plan. If we're able to really carry it out the way I want to, is to get out of the city because that's my environment first of all, as opposed to urban. So once I get out there, I'm good. But even then, getting there that might be difficult.
But that brings up a great point. I teach in one of my classes for people that live in apartments or live in rental property. You may not be able to put it in the ground. You may not have ground to put it in, but you can always grow in a bucket and take that bucket with you.
Yep. Back to the I forget what the word was you used when you started this part of just how much is waste. That's what you had said. There's a new trend going around called minimalism. I don't know if y'all have read about it. It's been on Facebook a good bit, and that's where I'm picking it up. And it's just people that they're going through their house, and they're looking at what do I have in my house that I haven't used in a while, the clocks that you were talking about in the last podcast where you're talking about walk through your house and see how many you have and how many do you really need that are consuming electricity. That's one version of minimalism. Get rid of all of those clocks and watches that you don't need. There's a friend of mine that she was going through her little office the other day and realized she had like six staplers. So what does she need that many for? So she started giving them away. And what I'm getting at is maybe that's an attitude to start thinking about, is how much of what I have do I really need?
And you bring up a great point, because Casey and I have talked, and I researched a little bit what you're talking about, and Casey's seen my backyard, and we've also had a discussion about going around and one man's trash is another man's treasure, and I'd pick stuff up and store it in my backyard. Now my backyard starting at one spot looks more like hoarding than storage.
But with that said, every bit of your backyard is usable. It has animals, you're growing, you're taking care of all that. So who's going to see your backyard? You know what I mean? If that's right. If that's your little farm, that's your little slice of heaven.
And there's a small bit of protection there. People aren't going to realize you can grow a garden on the back porch of your apartment.
Right. But the point I was making is the more accumulation I had back there, the less room I had to grow. And the less room I had to put more livestock.
One thing I keep mentioning that, and one thing that's kind of appealing to what you're saying, and we can do this in another episode, but you know, I'm going to be renting at least for the next 4 to 5 years with my current job. I'm going to be moving around a good bit. And so I'm either going to be
living. That's usually what felons on the run do.
Hey, hush.
They're only felons if they get caught.
You're going to blow my cover. So I'm going to be limited on space. And being able to do something like that in my backyard on a small scale like what you're talking about is appealing to me right now.
And one thing I'm researching a lot of right now, if you can't grow out, grow up, vertical gardening.
There you go, guys. You know, I think that's an excellent point to end on there, Marshall. If you don't have the space, you know, go vertical. Plenty of stuff out there, and I'm sure we'll wind up doing a video and another podcast on it. I'm glad we got to touch on this topic. I'm glad we were able to play devil's advocate on a lot of this, and you know, just bringing Marshall aboard, like I said before, has really opened up a different vein, a different avenue for us to go down, and it's given us a lot more opportunity to argue this, to bring up points, bring up new topics on things. So I think it's a good thing. And I'm looking for many, many, many more podcasts, guys. And we hope y'all stick around, because again, you know, this is for y'all. We enjoy this. We do, you know, it's free. We don't charge a dime for this, and we'd love to hear some feedback. So hit us up at all of our email addresses, info@thesurvivalpost.com, info@LouisianaSchoolOfBushcraft.com. You got, 504, what is it? The 504 Farmer.
No, just 504farmer@gmail.com.
There you go, 504farmer@gmail.com. If you have any questions on either one of those schools, if you have a question for any one of us, feel free to email us at info@thesurvivalpost.com, and it'll get to the right person, guys. Again, as always, I'm Casey.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Marshall.
And we are The Survival Post.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More. Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More.